Today's speaker, certainly known to you all, is in truth a most serious and many-faceted human being. He is obviously an immensely successful entertainer, a superb satirist. His personal appeal and a vast young audience have made him a leading political and social philosopher for the younger generation. He is also an able businessman, a producer, publisher of both plays and records. Mr. Smothers' recent rebellion at private corporate censorship created intellectual controversy of an intensity and persistence rarely seen in American society. His person and philosophy are now the vortex of the entire censorship issue, ranging from government through race relations, religion, and public exposure. It had been the plan to tell you that Tom Smothers' initiation to show business was at San Francisco's Purple Onion. But since this program is carried on 26 radio stations, his early life has been censored. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tom Smothers.
I'm honored to be asked here, and particularly since San Francisco is a place that I really dig very much. And I don't know that all much about the Commonwealth Club, but I like to say to all the members that it's really great to be back in Frisco. I'm not putting you on or anything, but I heard somewhere that the Commonwealth Club was the most squarest group in California outside of the Minutemen. Now, that didn't even bother me. I was looking over the previous list of speakers, and it's pretty formidable who have spoken before the Commonwealth Club, and they were all heavyweights, and I just pulled out a few just to mention. There were Senator Eugene McCarthy and Robert Kennedy and Senator Goldwater in politics, Cecil B. DeMille in the movies, Billy Graham in religion, Henry Ford II, and General Maxwell Taylor in the military-industrial complex. And Ann Landers. All of these peoples and all their words and accomplishments have had a great effect on man. Now, I like to say, before I get into it, I'm not a public speaker in the classical sense of being a public speaker. I mean, I've spoken before the public, but it wasn't in this classical type of standing up at a rostrum and giving a speech, and I'm still, you know, actually, I'm not a public speaker. I'm a former TV performer. So I'd like to say I'm happy to be here. Happy to be anywhere. My speech is going to be kind of random thoughts because I don't know how to structure things right, but I have some ideas and some concepts I'm going to lay on you. I would do a lot better if I had cue cards and a fascist brother next to me. First, I want to mention in these orders. Number one, I'm a communicator first. This is how I feel it. And when someone says, what's your occupation? I say, I'm a communicator. Secondly, I'm a performer comedian. And thirdly, I am not a trained dog. And this probably led to the cancellation of the Smothers Brothers show on CBS. And there's been many people when we've moved around who have said, as a performer, you have no right to express your personal views on national issues and social and national and social issues. Others, they've said, I've had no right because I am a performer and a communicator to express myself on national issues. Others have said, I have no right to express myself on national issues because I went to San Jose State. Now, both of them agree, I have no right. I feel, though, I have a right not to be a hypocrite. I think everyone has a duty to express publicly his private views and on the biggest platform that is available to anyone, whether you're a judge or businessman. I say, why communicate a lie if it's not the way you feel? And the subject, as you know, is censorship and the new freedoms. And I'd like to make a correction on this because I'm going to take off a little. I would like to change that from censorship and the new freedoms to new censorship, the new censorship on the old freedoms. Now, the old freedoms that we're talking about, there's no new freedoms. The old freedoms were the right to say what you believe. The new censorship, the new type of censorship, is you have the right to say what you believe, but not to say it to those you want to say it to. The Bill of Rights has a clause that says a freedom of speech, but there isn't a clause in there saying freedom of hearing. Freedom to hear free speech. And the new censorship is not limiting ideas whatsoever, but it's limiting the platform where you could say it. For example, right here in the Commonwealth Club of 700 people, this is approximate. Every hour, there would have to be a whole new group coming in, 8 hours a day, and I have to continue speaking, eight hours a day with a new group every hour for 25 years to reach 1 hour of network programming in one night. Now that's the new censorship. There's one valid censorship that I abide by and I believe in. The only valid censorship of ideas is the right of people not to listen. That's the only kind of censorship I will accept, and I intend to continue and fight for that right for people to hear, because I believe that America wants to know. For example, this is a little statistic, this always blows people's minds. There has been since 1946, since television really became of age, $25 billion spent by Americans on receivers, television receivers. And they're spending $2.5 billion every year, annually, on television receivers. So it seems to me that someone wants to be informed, someone wants to be entertained, but not necessarily entertained without being informed. Eldridge Cleaver has something to say. Maybe he's saying it in Cuba, maybe he's saying it in Algiers. You might not agree with what he has to say. Joe Pine, I hear, I don't agree with it. William F. Buckley, I hear, he's eloquent, but I don't agree with it. And I hear Ronald Reagan, I don't even believe that. Marshall McLuhan, who is an expert in new electronic communications and everything, said man lives in an environment of information. And therefore, we all react to the information that's given us. And regardless of whether the information is correct, incorrect, valid, we make decisions based on that information. When the number one media in the country was newspapers, I believe we went to war with Spain. Remember the main. And the television can do the same thing. There are two generations. There's your generation, there's my generation. Your generation, or the older generation, was brought up before television. It had books, structure that was strong, words and sentences. The younger generation was brought up with television and electronic communication. The two generations, the books, orderly structure, word by word sentence, slow information. Now there's another correlation between these two generations. Why are we having a problem? It's not age, it's attitude. People older than the young people we're all concerned about. Remember when an auto took a long time to be designed and manufactured, and it was looked forward to. And you realize the time it took. Government was slow due process, and change was orderly and bureaucratic. And now, this generation was brought up with television, sees a new car, just like that, it just appears instantly. Wars begin with no due process, and they see it on the tube. There is a riot that we can see on television, but the news doesn't tell the frustration which led to that riot. Everything that this new generation has is instantaneous on television. Today, the child by 18 years old, I get into some of these figures, it's really exciting. They're approximate. By the time he's 18 years old, or they're 18 years old, has spent 22,000 hours before the television set. A man, by the time he's 65 years old, has spent 9 full years, 24 hours a day before the television set. And all we have to do is every man, regardless of their political philosophy, or their any kind of belief they have, know that television isn't doing the job. Every columnist, every writer, every critic says it's another crummy season with no content, nothing. I always wonder what happened to Jack Parr. Now we've got Merv Griffin, Joey Bishop, and Johnny Carson. You can switch either one. You're hearing the same thing. They look the same. They're saying the same stuff. The generation we're talking about and what I'm part of, and I feel I'm, even though I'm an adult, grown-up man, responsible, that I'm a child of change. We've been told through television that we have instant success. You can take a deodorant and all of a sudden you're beautiful. You can take a mouth mint and boy, the chicks are around right away. Your popularity, your success, and the solutions to problems in a situation comedy are solved in a half hour. Or in an hour drama, right there. So it's no wonder that I and they want to have instant justice, instant brotherhood, and instant peace. Why shouldn't we have it? That's the way it is. Why should the process be so slow? We've been brought up to know that desegregation has been going on with the land of the free for 100 years, and yet people are saying, why are the blacks pushing? Why are the young upset and oppressing too much? Well, it's because of that upbringing of electronic information, and we've got to adjust to those demands as quickly as we will sell a product as businessmen to them. Both generations also have a common awareness of hypocrisy. The older generation is aware that the hypocrisy of going to church on Easter and Christmas and then maybe going out and messing around with someone's wife. They know it's the hypocrisy of maybe fixing traffic tickets, messing with taxes. Sexual integrity and morality is only for public voicing, not for private belief. And that war isn't good. They know that, but we got to have it. I say my generation believes in the church that the church isn't fulfilling a need. It doesn't matter where you go or when you go. They think that segregation, as we talk and pay lip service to it, is not happening, the desegregation. We know that war, this young generation wants peace. You talk about it, and where is it? And the sexual mores of them are not hypocritical, but they're aware that there is a hypocrisy in it, but they're free. They express themselves because it's an Eastern gentle philosophy. The artist and the creator, I say, are like an outrider on a wagon train. They see into the future. They create into the future. Those are the people that cannot be stifled. There's never been a civilization ever where the artists, creative artists, were not stopped, that there was not political and social repression. And when it starts happening, when an artist, without stepping over any rules or bounds, is stopped, we can see the repression in the political structure. And when there's been free artists, there's been a free society. You can watch the news. You watch the news and it's pretty disgusting. Killing, murder, riot, boom, every night. And it's a direct result of television not fulfilling its obligation to air those views and have dialogue, whether you like it or not. And whether someone in the South doesn't like it or not. It's better in your living room on the screen so you can hear what that other guy's up to than have to go out into the streets and attract attention to get a platform to speak from. Politics. The networks charge full rate to every politician who is running for office. full rate. Some, they have to go out, borrow, beg to get the money. Whoever has the most money has the most time. It should not cost to share the public's business with the public. Every station in America has generally makes 100% profit. As businessmen, you know that's pretty heavy. And yet they don't even want competition. Now that isn't the American way either. The most important issue, you know, we talk about the problems in the ghettos, the problems with the college areas and the students, the problems with the young, the problems with war and peace. I'll say forget it. My one concern and the one solution is not taking care of each individual problem, but getting access to media so all of you can hear what's going on. Then we can make a decision. Where was that ABM discussion? Where was Johnny Carson and those people when it became such a hot issue? Where was that discussion for late night shows? These are really troubled times, and I get very depressed, and I think that if I don't break through, I'll drop out too. I can live a good life. I could have stayed on television. My brother, bless his heart, has said, you've got my carte blanche to do what you want to do. And that's his career, and it amounted to millions a year. So I'm not saying it with lip service. I'm saying it because I believe it. And any man who has any power better use it, because you only go through life once, and when you see a wrong being done, or someone in trouble, or a fellow man that is in need, and you don't do it now, you'll never be past that point again. Thank you. Is my time up?
No, you've got about 15 minutes.
Oh, I got 15 minutes?
15
minutes. I've been really roaring through this.
Let's go on in 10 minutes. You've got about 3 minutes.
Okay. I got another funny analogy. You know, in early America, and when we talk about right wing and Americanism and all that, and they kept going back to let's get government back to the people, which I believe should be done. There was a communication thing that they had where they aired their discussions and everything, and that was a town square. And you could say they had soapboxes, maybe three soapboxes in the town square, which you could equate today to the three networks, which control or owned or affiliated with about 93-94% of all the stations in this country. It's a triopoly. But it would be just the same as in a town square in early America, three soapboxes, and the only people who were allowed on it were minstrels and funny men who said nothing. I know a lot of us here have different political and philosophical and social views of how to correct things in America, but I know also that whether it's George Wallace, Richard Nixon, Eugene McCarthy, we all care about America. It's a matter of how we're going about it. And the greatest breakdown in communication is that we won't take the time to listen. Or the networks won't allow it to listen because they're worried about an offended letter coming in saying, hey, he shouldn't have said that. They're not concerned with true dialogue to make people think. My comedy and my brother's was intended to be humorous and thought-provoking. When should that become an issue? How can a man become embroiled in controversy when all he is concerned and exercising his right not to be hypocritical and represent what we all feel? We're all in polarized positions. Some people will just close their ears. But those of us that have something to say should say it. We talk about agitators and long hair. Agitators have become a dirty word, like socialism and communism. And I bet you there's not a person, very few people in America, that even knows whether communism is a political or economic structure. I skipped a point. Thomas Jefferson was a good American. And he made a point, if we can use it as an analogy, that newspapers became radio, and newspapers, and that in each turn became The next thing it became was television. But Jefferson had a quote. He said, "If I had to choose between a government without newspapers and newspapers without a government, I would never hesitate to choose the latter. Because an informed public, an informed electorate is a free electorate. And we haven't been informed. We haven't been informed about what's the reason that the blacks are pushing now. What's the reason of the college and the youth saying, I don't dig your style anymore. You're paying lip service. We don't hear a Black Panther on a national show, and yet they're in the papers all the time. We've got to be informed, or we might as well just give it up and live a good life. Profit has become the sole motivating purpose in our country." Mason Williams, a very dear friend of mine, made up a little thing. He said, government makes better deals with business than it does with people. We saw in Sacramento not too long ago a consumer protection bill go through that by the time it just about got ready to be passed, it was a businessman's protection against the public. And it got through, damn near got through, and we didn't even know it. I have one last thing that I really, someone sent it in. Ever since we've been canceled, it's like I'm surprised that I'm here to be able to talk to you, because I always expected, as most of us do, somebody else that's really qualified. I expected a very heavyweight type of producer or someone else to be in this position. And I don't feel qualified whatsoever. San Jose State really didn't. I learned to drink beer great. And swing pretty good. But here I am. Where are all these people with those big IQs and really some heavyweight things to say? We've been accused of being, and anybody else who speaks out what they feel has been accused of being an American. A letter came in saying, your father, who died in the Philippines, would turn over in his grave in disgust at his two sons. Agitators are used constantly. It's outside agitators. Boom, we did a little skit on it. We came out and said, hey, we're the outside agitators. And he smiled, everybody laughed. But Mark Twain said in the Connecticut Yankee, this was sent in to me because people keep sending beautiful things to me, statements, philosophy. And I have hope, but the hope is meaningless unless people like you, who have power, have a platform, have a voice, and I know have true humanistic views, do not support that. This was from Mark Twain's, I'm not a legitimate actor, but here's what he said, I'm reading. It was called My Kind of Loyalty. And this was sent to me by someone, I don't remember. Mark Twain said this, remember this and take it to heart and live by it and die for it if necessary, that our patriotism is medieval, outworn, and obsolete, that the modern patriotism, the true patriotism, the only rational patriotism is loyalty to the nation all the time and loyalty to the government when it deserves it. My kind of loyalty was loyalty to one's country, not to its institutions or its office holders. The country is a real thing to watch over. Institutions are extraneous. They are its mere clothing, and clothing can wear out, become ragged. And to be loyal to rags is disloyal and is being a traitor. The citizen who thinks he sees that the Commonwealth's political clothes are worn out and yet holds his peace and does not agitate for a new suit is disloyal. He is the traitor. And that he may be the only one that sees this decay does not excuse him. It is his duty to agitate anyway. My final remark is, even though a man has been silenced, does not mean that he has been converted. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom Smothers, for a truly sparkling talk. The question period today will be handled by the President of the Commonwealth Club of California, Justice Wakefield Taylor.
Tom, if you will return to the rostrum here, we have a large number of interesting questions. Many of them cannot be asked. Many of them you answered in your talk. But I think these are fairly representative of the questions submitted. The first is, do you have any indication whether your confrontation with CBS has made the networks generally more or less censorship-minded for the coming season?
It certainly seems that way because they've been successful in stopping very gentle satire. And one of my friends is doing a show we helped create called Music Scene. Some of my John Hartford and Jennifer Warren people that we worked with have a special, and they've taken out a thing that they thought would be offensive to someone. And it's more strong because they've proved their point, and we can't get on television again as a series. No networks will have us. I think it's very strong, but I think that people are becoming aware. Censorship is in, you hear it in Czechoslovakia, in Argentina, in Russia, and in the United States. That word is becoming familiar, and I think it's going to continue that way, unless I can stop it with some of my friends.
The next question, Tom, is what can we, the public, do to open the media to full and fair communication?
I think it's become important and imperative. Most people who resented the Smothers being taken off, not because they all agreed with what we did, because sometimes we didn't make it, but everybody wrote to CBS to tell them that they're not going to watch it again. That's like writing to the Pentagon saying you don't dig the war. I think the greatest thing that can be done is to make the positive feelings felt to your congressman and senator. Those people react because they've got to be reelected. That's more important to them than even copping out.
The next question, Mr. Smothers, or the next series of questions.
You can call me
Tom.
Tommy. You get more sympathy that way. Call me Tom.
A number of questions concerning your opinion as to what, if any, should be the censorship. What is your definition of the difference between comedy and vulgarity?
Well, it's pretty obvious. We never dealt in vulgarity. Senator Pastore. It's an obvious difference. It's a rhetorical question because Senator Pastore got up, talked a lot about filth, sex, gore, and violence on television. Now, I'm a little licentious. I keep switching around. I can't find it. A general indictment on television as being obscene, filthy, and sexual, and bad taste, and it's not there. It's so bland already. And then they've turned around, Senator Pastore, which was very publicized, those hearings he had on television violence, which he couldn't get anything out of, so he got into sex and gore and the other thing, is that he has now put in a bill in that America is not aware of, and the people here are not aware of, that will amend the 1934 Communication Act, stating that a licensee doesn't have to come up for renewal every 3 years or have anybody else challenge them on that renewal of their license. The public owns the airwaves. Let them make a profit, but let them hold their responsibility as to what's put on the air. And that kind of thing, a quiet pushing of the bill like that, because every senator, every mayor has to come up for re-election. Everybody gets to challenge him. It's the right of the people. It's their politics, it's their airwaves, and yet not a person here, I have very few people even aware of it. After that big publicity thing, Pastore knows how to get publicity, and he knows how to avoid it when he wants to push something else through. What was the question? Vulgarity, I don't deal in it, and we've never ever abused an NAB code or an FCC doctrine. All we did was give an opinion, and America's becoming, it seems so, that they don't want to even hear the other guy. That ain't American.
The next question, Tom, is more pointed. What censorship of TV program content is there not danger of material inappropriate for home child consumption, particularly material such as is now commonplace on the stage as Hair or Old Calcutta?
I don't believe that there's ever been in these last 10 years or 20 years of television has been so restricted. If you could be there and hear creative artists who want to say something be stifled and stopped. There is nothing today with this electronic media where information, this is the most aware, sophisticated, mature young people the world has ever produced here in the United States. And they are prepared to hear anything. Yet it hasn't even gone that far. There's children that are brought to see Hair. If they're not aware of a naked body, if they're not aware of those words, and every one of you that have children at 9 and 10 years old know a lot of four-letter words, but you both go around pretending you don't know, each the other one knows. There's nothing. I'm talking about content. I'm talking about not about sexual morality changes. I'm talking about content dealing with black-white, politics, social change. There's nothing that we've ever done that's ever been censored out of our show that couldn't be seen by any kid. And any kid who saw it, as a 14-year-old once said, you know, TV censorship is taking out and deleting something you already know.
Tom, on the same
subject. Yeah, I'm doing pretty good, huh?
On the same subject, Tom, and leading this, I think, is going a little further. Is it your view that TV program material should be completely free of network supervision? If this is the case, how about liability?
I think that question was phrased very interestingly. People don't believe that there's any other way of communicating other than through the networks. If you look at the networks, you've got the same thing. The network control too much. They should not be allowed to censor. I say every licensee, because he is subject to renewal, it's his responsibility, which goes out over his station, has the right to censor. And we have a show coming up September 10th, the one that was never seen, that was said to be filthy, bad taste in general, and not fit for American consumption. It'll be on the air, and we said to Robert Wood, president of CBS, way before we were canceled, I abide by the fact that the licensee has a responsibility and he can delete anything he wants out of my show. There's 190 markets and each person is an individual. And each product and each creative effort that I make should be censored, not in anticipatory, another word I don't know. What's that word?
Liability.
Oh, liability. There's no liability. They have equal time provisions. The stations all, the networks all have equal time provisions. If someone says something that is demeaning and that whole thing, putting down and it's a lie, another guy gets to come on and use equal time. But they don't do that. They don't want anybody to say anything because they don't want to give up any time for someone to rebut it. Where the hell's that? And that's what we do every one of our days. We're talking, someone says, boy, you're a dummy. And you say, oh yeah, you're a dummy. Now here's a thing that reaches 150 million people every day. 70% of the men, 80% of the women, 90% of teenagers, and 99% of every child between the ages of 4 and 11. That's our platform to talk to each other. We haven't heard the other side.
Next question is, does not a network or sponsor have a right of, or the freedom to buy an entertainment show per se instead of social commentary if that is what they want?
What the networks want. The networks are not licensed by the federal government. The networks are providers of entertainment to all the stations across the country. We are creative artists. When we create, and if it's in the bounds of good taste, which we have been, occasionally we stray, because we all do. They don't have the right. The networks, we've got to get them. Networks, I don't want to destroy networks. They make great contribution to a lot of programming, but there's no room between syndication, which is not very good, and network programming quality, technical quality. Where is that gap in between? How can I get my show into a market when CBS says, well, you pick up that show, you're going to get in trouble? There's a place for a Buick or a Pontiac or a Mercury in television, and there's no, you're either here or you're there. What I want to do is to be able to make my show and my brother and myself's talents, even at a lesser price, available to other people who think maybe the networks aren't doing a job. The networks will always be there because they got it. But there certainly is room, 10, 20%, 5%, to have some quality programs. We shouldn't have to worry about getting a platform because they've got it all booked up with the Beverly Hillbillies when the country's on fire. Julia, who is our answer to the black problem, so we all think, boy, if those they get out and start messing around, well, they're not like Julia. Now, where is the real issue? Art has always been created out of the society in which it exists. And if there's turmoil, the books, the art, through the Renaissance period was all religious, through the 17th century France, the revolutionary period, Voltaire, it was on revolution. And now we get into our time. What do we have? Not a thing that touches on the thing we're all concerned about, regardless of our views. The networks are making sure that doesn't happen. Why would David Wolper and Xerox have to go through syndication? Because the networks wouldn't take that kind of quality programming. They should be made to say, I wouldn't be wanting to syndicate or alternative networking if the networks would say, okay, in prime time, I'm going to do it. You look at their gross and their net figures, $500 million approximately for CBS, net. And they don't have time to give free time for a politician so that we can have our business brought to us so we can be informed. Or time for some of those Sunday programs to be put on in prime time. Let them lose a little advertising dollar. Is profit that important? Obviously, it's become that important that the kids now, we see Biafra. We're told that we always protect the people that don't have something. We are very incensed about Germany and the Jews, and yet we allow this to go on, and every kid knows. We got maybe some kind of rights in there, don't we? Why would England support this sort of thing? Why would the United States stay neutral when we applauded France when they came in during our revolution and helped us? Because it was on the side of people being free. The network's responsibility in television and broadcasters, individual broadcasters, every station has a responsibility not to try to make the biggest profit, but to balance it off. You can always make a profit. How much can one man keep? Or how much can one organization keep? Where is Americans' soul anymore? We read it, we talk it, we talk peace, 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 and all we're doing is killing. We talk equality, and all we do is subjugate those people and not give them a chance. Where was big business? There's businessmen here. Why hasn't it been in Watts? Where is that business down there? Where is a free enterprise system to say, I'll take a little lower profit? Let's correct this thing because it's my country. You don't even have to like Negroes, but it's your country. And if they're burning it, you better listen. And if the kids are fighting, you better listen. Long hair only became important, it only happened, and we're all uptight about it. I'd grow it if I could. World War I was the beginning of long hair. After the war, our soldiers came back with their hair cut short because it took away a little bit of individuality and made them a little bit more able to take orders, and they lost a little bit of what each of us has. Oh, I'm sorry, I gave a speech.
After that very serious answer, I think this question is probably appropriate. Are you responsible for the censorship of Dick Smothers? Does this stem from his refusal to permit you to preview his cue cards?
I like to say, my brother, what is it, what is that word, Justice, that they, when you sign over, power of attorney. Yeah. He's giving me power of attorney. He is not a social, or he's not really gets uptight. He takes care of his family, his close friends, and then if it doesn't interfere with his life, he'll take care of something else. I don't deny that right to anyone. He cares about things, but not as strongly as I do. Yet he is giving me time to play with his life. We all should do that. We should all say, okay, I don't want every one of you to be a revolutionary, I care as much as I do. We all got to live and we all want material wealth. And if I really was really a radical man and really believed totally, I'd move out of a very groovy house. And I'd go down and really do it. But we all want some material wealth. That's what we're looking for, some comfort. But when does the line stop? What was the question?
Another question about Dick. Does your mother really like Dick better?
Let me put it this way. I was an only child. Maybe not hers. I don't know. You never know your origin, do we? It doesn't make any difference. You got another controversial?
Tom, we have time but for one more question before asking it. On behalf of the members of the Commonwealth Club of California, many of whom are here today in the Grand Ballroom of the Palace Hotel in San Francisco at our regular Friday Ladies Day luncheon today, I want to express the appreciation of all of us for your taking the time to come to us and discuss this very important question of censorship.
Why don't you?
We're very grateful to you. I have one more question, however.
And after that question, could I ask you something?
Yes. No, I won't answer it.
Well, good. I'd just like to say, would you tell me, would you say to me, you know, person to person right here, that it was nice to, you know, for me to have me on the show?
Oh, I think it was fine, but I'll stand on my constitutional rights.
No, why don't you just say it's nice having you on the show.
Well, it's very nice to have you on the show.
Nice to be had. Hey, you play bass?
Now, the last question is, are you considering running for public office, such as the United States Senate, in 1970?
Not at all, man. That's all I want to do is open up communications. The politicians haven't been able to do it. I think the only way that you can do it, and that's the most important thing to me, more than being a politician, although it'd be kind of groovy, man, to walk around and be a politician, because there's only two people in that last election, and they're both at the opposite ends of the polls, and they said a little bit of truth, and people are so thirsty. Eugene McCarthy and George Wallace, and I admire them both. Where were the rest of them for the last 20 years? Dodging questions, never answering them directly. So I admire those two men extremely. And I'd like to have a show in Washington that every time one of those young senators or freshman congressmen or whatever had to pass a bill, we don't hear about it because we don't read those long, crummy pieces, a lot of little print. Have these people come out. The people that are chairmen and stuff like that will expose themselves. The young people who care or new people in there would have a viewpoint expressed to the American public. Congress should be on television every single day, not through printed media. It's all over. That's what we read for enjoyment when we're not watching television. That's what I'd like to do. I don't want to be a senator. I want to be the Messiah.
This is Durward S. Riggs. Across the microphone from me sits Tom Smothers, comedian, singer, producer, most famed for the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, who spoke before the weekly general meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California here at the Sheraton Palace Hotel in San Francisco on the topic censorship and the new freedoms. Tommy, during your address, you modified your title slightly to include new censorship. Can you tell us about
that? It was the new censorship on old freedoms. There's no new freedoms now. It's just that the censorship now is taking the place. It was classical censorship when our show was on the air by deletions of bits and pieces. The new censorship now is denying the platform. You're allowed to say whatever you want, but you can't say it on the platform to the people you want to say it to. That's the new censorship. And I thought, when I saw the title, I was immediately stimulated. I said, oh yeah, that's groovy, and I thought about it. And I realized that I'm being able to say whatever I want, but to a lot fewer people, and not in the form that I'm most qualified to say it in, which is in presentations and comedy and satire and singing and all those things. I've got to do it by voice. I talk to people individually, and that's the new censorship, denying access to say it. The new freedoms are really the old freedoms, which has always been there by a constitutional Bill of Rights, freedom of speech. There should be a new addition to the Bill of Rights in the Constitution, which is freedom to hear.
You've recently been the subject of censorship in a way. Can you tell us what you feel might be the only valid censorship today?
I think the only valid censorship is the censorship of the only valid censorship is the right of the people not to listen. And people have the right not to listen, to turn off the knob or walk away. That's valid. Anything else beyond that is censorship in the dirtiest term. Denial of access to speak what you feel, as long as it's within some kind of terms. I'm not a dirty comedian. I don't get into vulgarity. And that censorship I'll buy, man. If people don't want to listen, that's where it's at. And people seem to want to listen. We had 30 million people. Now that is the new censorship. Take him off, let him go shoot his mouth off wherever he wants, but he's not going to do it on the big platform. And every platform has changed consistently. When newspapers were the main information communication area, they were restricted. When movies came out, they were restricted. When radio took over, movies got loose, newspapers got loose, and radio was restricted. Now, television is the main mode of communication. It's restricted, and the rest of them are running free, and they're saying that's a new freedom. Well, it's not a new freedom. It's just been consistently each one that takes over the predominant communication airwaves or channels is always restricted because that can make people think. And there's never been a free society that's had restricted artists, and there's never been restricted artists without restriction in the political and social areas. And that's what I'm concerned about, because we don't have much time. America doesn't have much time. The world doesn't have much time.
In addition, you drew an interesting parallel between the communications that the various generations in American recent history have had access to and how it's affected our society. Could you tell us about this a little?
Well, I drew an analogy that I got to be truthful. I got it out of there's a Kaiser newspaper that comes out weekly in an internal magazine. It's beautiful. And it was stating that, and I saw it right away, that the older generation, the establishment, the thing that people with young ideas are aware of change, the old generation realized that the automobile took a long time to manufacture, to design, and they anticipated it, and when it came out, they all rushed down to the showrooms to view it. Remember that. And that due process was slow, and everything was done in orderly, slow, and methodical fashion. Now, the other generation, these young people brought up with television, don't know everything is instant. Instant success, instant automobiles presented, boom, like that. Every other day, there's some new thing coming out, a new product, a new thing to make you groovier and better and things. So that was the parallel. And these kids now want instant peace, instant justice, instant brotherhood,
all these things because they've been told it's instant. If technology, if we can, as Thomas Bradley said, he said, if we can put a man up on the moon, but we can't put a man up on his feet down here. Now we see this, and these kids see this, and they say, hey, well, hell, man, we should be able to take care of those people down there. We see some things that are wrong. And they want it instantly. If they have to instantly buy something to keep a thing going, they have to instantly accept a new idea, why not do it in the other things? The paradox is everything is instant and immediate, communications, technology, building, the elimination of things that can take place so fast. And yet, on all the things that do with people, it's so slow. And they can't tolerate it, nor can I. I just can't take it.
Several years ago, I think it was either during the Hungarian Revolt or the Cuban crisis, possibly, the emergency sessions of the United Nations were broadcast over some TV stations on the East Coast, and these stations were deluged with calls by people complaining because they had preempted the time for Bonzo the Talking Dog.
I know that Fred Friendly quit from CBS because they wouldn't show the subcommittee hearings on one of the things that were very important, because and they showed a Lucy rerun. You're always going to have letters. I mean, nobody's ever happy, but the responsibility is to the nation to inform. And we've got letters, letters, letters. That's why we're off the air, because of the letters that came in. But we weren't put on the air when they received, and when we received like 50,000 letters complaining about our cancellation. A CBS sent out a nice, groovy little thing that said, and we're glad we agree with you, and they sent out a pamphlet that said, is taste obsolete, like we had no taste. And those things will always take place. Small groups, when we had Pete Seeger on the show, I don't care whether I or anybody else agrees with him, it should be heard, because he's been defamed and the whole thing. The man cares about the air we breathe and ecology. He's really involved in it, and he's never done anything. He's too gentle. You meet him and you see him, you know he's not a revolutionary, he's not a communist. There it is. And we got letters primarily from outside the Chicago area, like 2530 on cards saying the same thing in different ways. We got it from Orange County. We got it from certain areas. They add them up. They say, well, that's 100 letters. That represents X times thousands of viewers, and therefore, if we do it again, we're going to lose all our things. And people say, well, I'm never going to buy that product. And CBS is truly now the communist broadcasting system because Pete Seeger was on. And, you know, CBS is the leader in some of the things they've done, in their news and stuff. But it's like they're not aware. It's like Las Vegas and television are the same. I mean, when people like... the squeaking door happens, you know, with that? No, when people, you know, like Von Monroe, nothing to put down, or K-Star or something, they're good performers, but they're still working Vegas. It took us 5 years to be able to work Vegas. Peter, Paul, and Mary never did. The Beatles never did when they were ready and when they would draw people. And television is that far behind. It's light years behind. The kids know it. And all this talk about, my kid saw you say the word pregnant. We weren't allowed to use the word pregnant because they'd get some letters from some minority small group of people who were hung up on things. And fluidity is the most important thing. We've got to change, man. The technology is making us change, yet all the institutions have not been changed.
Well, do you think that TV programming could be improved if it were more issue-oriented?
No, I think TV programming can be improved when the artist takes control and the individual station outlets take responsibility and censor, eliminate what fits their geographic location. But the creative artist has to reflect the society he lives in. And we can't reflect what the Michael Danns or Perry Lafferty's or of CBS and television or the Rule, Elton Rule, or whoever of all these stations who are afraid. People in America and all Western civilization are afraid of failure. And we applaud that when we hear the phrase, man, that guy is really a scrapper. He hates to lose. And everybody says, yeah, man, he's really good, hates to lose. All he does is prepare himself not to take a risk and not to take a shot. He will always come in occasionally first, a lot of times third, fourth, fifth, tenth. He'll always be in the money, but he'll never do a thing that's called progress, because there's very few people who want to win. They all say, boy, that guy hates to lose, and everybody applauds and gets excited. I want to win. I want to win my issue and my point, which is everybody's point. But I want to lay it out, because I've lost a lot of times. I've lost again and again and again. It don't hurt. All it does is make you stronger. But these people are afraid of their jobs. They're afraid of their position. They've got the kids, and if they know that long line of the bureaucratic system, which is the government, is very similar to big business and networks and all the whole thing. Everybody's humping for their job. Every politician wants a re-election. I talked to a congressman in Washington who said, well, you know, we're only elected every 2 years, and we can't get on this issue. We want the 18-year-old vote, but, you know, most of those people voting are over, where is, you know, and yet, every time a man stepped out and made political suicide, so to speak, you know, like McCarthy or like Wallace or like individuals or any of those things, they've always come out on top, because people are just, they're dying of thirst of a little truth and a little honesty and commitment. And we have a whole country under 30 years old, 25 years old, that's so committed, and yet everybody's putting them down because they've got long hair. The only reason they got long hair is they don't like the military, and the reason we got short hair is because the military after World War II, that's how they made people shape up. Man, you look good with long hair. Not real long hair, but long hair so you could comb it. And you got good hair, man. I don't have any hair. I tried to grow long hair and a mustache. I couldn't even grow. I spent 6 months on sideburns and letting my hair grow. I look like hell. Because I really want to relate to that, because those are the people. Those are the people who make changes.
Do you think there's any hope for television?
Absolutely, there's no hope for the world.
Oh, come now.
Oh, I was just...
Some?
There's some. There's hope for television, because right now, individual stations and the advertiser are starting to feel that maybe network programming, which is 95% of the primetime stuff done, is not filling the bill, because our show was constantly sold out all the way through, because we were reaching the people who are buying the products that these consumer products they want to buy. I dig the free enterprise system. But to be put off the platform, now they've got a hole, they've got a problem. They were so afraid they didn't even care about losing dollars, because they're making so much. Everybody's making so much. Everybody's thing is, I mean, for the government to let something like thalidomide go by, to not to say, okay, there'll be no cigarette advertising. I mean, if we want to smoke, we have that right to smoke. But why do we have to advertise it? And then they're backing off. Everybody's playing games. There's hypocrisy so much through the government, and, you know, absolutely point-blank political. I heard that Shirley Temple Black might be possibility. She might be appointed to the FCC. That chick, I mean, nothing, not to put her down, but that... That's the responsibility of the American people. Where's that knowledge? Where they sent an appointed ambassador because of something? What's that guy from Triangle Productions?
Annenberg.
Annenberg. The plush plum of ambassadorships to England. Just attacked us completely. And there's no reason. And we send ambassadors and these things over that can't even speak the language. And we're running out of time.
We sure are. Tom, as a finale, can you briefly tell us, are the networks generally more sensitive about satire now?
Absolutely. Now that the polarization, always a negative response is much more forceful and has much more dynamics in force, because people always write when they're bugged or they've been done in. People that dig it never applaud. And of course, the strength right now is the fact that people who don't like to hear something of truth will write in right away, and the pressure's on. There'll be no opening up. This will be one of the dullest seasons that television has ever seen, although there's been 10 years of it.
Good. Tom, thanks a lot. Next week, the Commonwealth Club of California will host as its regular Friday speaker the Honorable James Hittle, Assistant Secretary of the Navy. His topic: the plight of United States prisoners of war.
End the war, and we won't have prisoners.